This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, July 27th, 2021. This is not Buster Olney. This is Dave Schoenfield filling in with my producers. We have two of them today, Taylor Schwenk and Nathan Garcia. Before we get to the baseball, though, guys, Taylor, I have to ask you your favorite Olympic sport and least favorite Olympic sport.
Ooh, good question to start the podcast with. I'm a big Olympics guy. I'll watch basically whatever. I think my favorite is probably basketball just because I love hoops so much. But I'm really into the indoor team volleyball. I really like watching that. That's a lot of fun. I watched USA lose to Russia last night. I like water polo a lot, too. But my least favorite stuff, this is going to be controversial. I don't really like gymnastics. The country is crazy for, and Simone Biles, she's amazing, and you know it's wild what they can pull off, but it just doesn't do it for me. So I'm sorry, America. What about you,
Dave? Is that like an anti-judging? You're against all sports with judges? That could be, which I understand, you know, judging can be controversial.
Yeah, you know what? I was actually going to take that stance, but that would be hypocritical of me because I really like the skateboarding. And they give out, that's done with judges. So generally I'm anti-judge sport, but I don't know. It's just not that interesting to me.
All right. Nathan, are you there? You got to weigh in with your favorite and least favorite.
Yeah, I'm going to go least favorite shooting. Really boring, really strange to watch. And then I have a new favorite as of late. I was just watching the highlights, but speed walking. Really exciting. Get crazy. You get a laugh out of it and it gets intense as the race wraps up. So it's my new favorite. Give it a watch.
Correct answer here is that track is the best sport still. And field is the worst sport because hammer throw, shot put, javelin, throwing a stick doesn't do a lot for me. So track and then field are the best and the worst. So, all right, let's get to some baseball on the news front. We have a couple trades for relievers. The A's acquired Andrew Chafin from the Cubs for a couple minor leaguers. He's been one of the best lefties in baseball this year. 2.06 ERA, just one home run in 39 innings. He also has an option for next year. So that's a guy that the A's could use for 2 years, not just a rental. Good little bullpen pickup there for Oakland. The Yankees acquire Clay Holmes from the Pirates for two minor league infielders. You know, he's kind of a back-end bullpen guy, but as we've seen in recent days, the Yankees need all the bullpen arms they can get. So, you know, decent pickup. He's held righties to a 173 batting average this year. Finally, Byron Buxton says he wants to stay with the Minnesota Twins, even though contract talks have stalled. He signed through next year, Taylor, so this isn't a trade him or not situation immediately, but his name's out there in trade rumors. I don't think they do anything. I think they keep him, hold him for next season. Jose Berrios, his teammate, who's also under team control for one more year, teams really want him. I think he's more likely to get traded. Now, let's move on to the highlights, and then after that, we'll bring in Brad Doolittle and Sarah Langs. Let's go to the game of the day where the Mariners had a miracle comeback against the Astros, trailing 7-0 early. They got back in the game, and then Dylan Moore stepped up in the bottom of the eighth, two outs, bases loaded, Mariners down 8-7.
Swing and a well-hit ball, deep to left field. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. Grand salami time. Upper deck, left field, down the line. Dylan Moore with a grand salami. And the Mariners lead the Astros 11-8.
That's Rick Riz from 710 ESPN Seattle. Good call, Rick. Go Mariners. That wasn't the only exciting win, as Javier Baez came up in the bottom of the ninth with the game tied when this happened.
Garrett Reddy, the pitch. Baez hits a fly ball. Cubs are going to win the ball game. Deep center field. Cubs win.
That's the Cubs Radio Network. We had another big walk-off hit. It was a night of walk-offs, Taylor. We had three of them last night in just nine games. The Nationals led the Phillies in the bottom of the ninth. Andrew McCutchen came to the plate.
Hand ready. Looks at first. He kicks. Here's the pitch. Cutch swings. Hits it in the air to right. It's deep. Soto looking up. He's looking up. And it is gone! Yes. The Phillies have won it. It's Andrew McCutchen on opposite field. Walk-off homer! 6-5 the final as Cutch has won it.
That's 94 WIP. Big, big win for the Phillies. That was McCutchen's eighth career walk-off home run, third most among active players. Another big AL East game, the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. The Jays looked like they were going to win, leading in the bottom of the eighth. Alex Verdugo came to the plate.
Swinging, there's a drive, hit high and deep, right center field, back by the bullpen, and it is gone! Two-run homer, Alex Verdugo, Red Sox lead 5-4, can you believe it?
Red Sox held on with that 5-4 final. They've cleaned up on the Blue Jays this year. One reason they're leading that division, and the Blue Jays are looking up at Boston and Tampa Bay.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
And we welcome aboard Brad Doolittle, baseball writer for ESPN. Before we get to the baseball, Brad, I have to ask you, though, what is your favorite Olympic sport and your least favorite Olympic sport?
Well, I was just telling my wife a couple of nights ago, and to be honest, I don't follow the Olympics, so this may actually be a winter sport, but I'm pretty sure it's a summer Olympic sport. It's the modern pentathlon. What a crazy combination of completely unrelated skill sets. And then my wife said, those skills are all related because it's what a person needs if society collapses and everybody has to go in survival mode. The medalists in the modern pentathlon, they're the ones that are going to last.
A good point. Certainly left over from our days of fighting wars across Europe, right?
Yeah.
What's your favorite sport?
Baseball.
Baseball. Okay. All right. Baseball tournament kicks off this week. We'll see what happens there. All right. I'll give you modern pentathlon. So my Mariners last night with a dramatic, unbelievable victory down 7-0 to the Astros. They're now only one game behind Oakland in the wild card race. Minus 49 run differential. So it's debatable how good this team really is, but they're in it. If you're sitting there near Jerry DePoto at the trade deadline, how do you look at things right now?
I mean, you have to be honest in your assessment of what you have. But at the same time, you know, you always say a team is what their record is. They are where they are in the standings. And as you say, they're only one game behind Oakland and they're building momentum. But at the same time, they have like every indicator of unsustainability that there is. I mean, you mentioned the big negative run differential. They're 23-8 in one run games. They're 10-1 in extra inning games. I was just looking at their offensive numbers this morning. They're I believe 28th in team OPS, but they're third in OPS with runners in scoring position. You know, none of this seems likely to last, but at the same time, you know, they are where they are. I don't think you go crazy. You don't empty the system trying to bolster a clearly flawed roster. And, you know, I don't think you can ever underscore the effect that a positive team chemistry has when a team is playing above expectation the way the Mariners are right now. And they've got a really good vibe about them. I mean, you saw them get really fired up last night when Dylan Moore hit the grand slam to put him ahead. And then it had the playoff feel to it, because right after that, Brooks Raley hit J.P. Crawford with a pitch and Raley got ejected and the managers were yelling at each other. It was great. And it's great to see that in Seattle. I think you look for targeted additions this week, but you're certainly not going to go crazy trying to add to that roster.
Yeah, you mentioned that average with runners in scoring position. Joe Sheehan had an article yesterday on his newsletter comparing the Mariners OPS with in high leverage situations versus overall, and their increase was the greatest since 1947. So yeah, overall their offense is terrible, but they've been one of the great clutch teams of all time, which is why they have those great records in one run games and extra inning games. Can they keep it up? I don't know, but yeah, they have obvious holes. Dylan Moore hit the home run last night, but they haven't gotten much production from second base. But to me, the biggest problem right now is center field. Jared Kelnick, 0-for-3 again last night with three strikeouts, did draw a big walk in that rally. But he's at 102, and he's just looking overmatched right now. No breaking ball recognition. So I guess it's a two-part question. Do you get a center fielder, and what do you do with Kelnick? Do you let him ride this out, or does he have to go back down to the minors?
Well, I mean, this is where I circle back to my comment, is you have to make an honest assessment. And, you know, obviously Jerry DePoto and the staff there know where Kelenic is emotionally right now and mentally, if they see indications that he's going to turn this around. Because if he's near a threshold where he's going to start producing like the top hitting prospect that we know that he is, the upside from that is more of an injection of production than they're going to get anywhere on the trade deadline. And that's kind of what you like with a young team that's on the rise, is the possibility that wherever you're at now, the trajectory is going to continue upward. But 102 is 102. And so certainly watching it from the outside, you don't see any indication that Kelenic is ready to, you know, make a playoff type impact right now. So again, I think you look at the trade market, you have discussions, but you're not going to go crazy trying to fill that slot.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and DePoto and the Mariners have been clear all along that they don't view this as a year that they were expecting to contend. This is kind of the final bridge year, the final year of rebuilding, and they go all in 2022. But here they are, obviously the franchise with the longest playoff drought in the majors, 2001. It'll be interesting. I think that's why Whit Merrifield's a name that's been rumored there, because he has team control for two more years beyond this one. So if you get him, at least he helps you not only this year, but next year as well. I know you're a Royals fan.
Yeah, and it would be bittersweet, I think, because Merrifield has been a great player for them. But he's kind of, his tenure has sort of come after the championship years of the middle of the last decade and before they've returned to contention. So it would be nice to see Merrifield contribute to a real contender in Kansas City, because the fans love him there. And by all indications, he loves being there. So we'll see. But he is exactly the kind of player that the Mariners need to add. I mean, this is a club with a .218 team batting average, and getting a guy with Merrifield's skill set is a perfect balance to that lineup.
I wanted to ask you about another team that I know you're familiar with, the White Sox. Eloy Jimenez returned last night. Where are they at? What do they do? They're going to win that division, so they don't really have to do anything. No major weaknesses, especially with Jimenez and then Luis Robert coming back at some point. Do you see them making any big moves or a minor move or two here?
I would guess that they're going to edge more towards the minor side as opposed to a big splash, simply because they've gotten so much this year out of what we would view as stopgap type players. You know, it's really become kind of the defining characteristic of this team. They've had some major injuries. I mean, Nick Madrigals is out for the season. Robert has been out for most of the season. Jimenez just made his season debut last night. And yet they are fifth in the majors in runs scored per game. And they're doing that even though this is a team that projected to have a lot of home run power, but they're like 25th in the majors in home runs. So it's just a really good team offense. And because of that, I don't think you have to go crazy trying to make a splash there. But that said, do you really go into October with some combination of Lira Garcia and Danny Mendick at second base? So I do think that if there is a major splash to be had, that's the position where you're going to see it. But in addition to that, I think the White Sox also really need to add at least one veteran to the bullpen. You know, they've got as many hard throwers out there as any team in the majors. They actually lead the majors in team average velocity on pitches. And they have this, parade of young guys. Kopech has been terrific out there, but then they've also got Garrett Crochet and Cody Hire. And Kopech has been very consistent, but Crochet and Hire both have been a little spotty with their command. And I'm talking about in terms of leaving pitches in the middle of the plate. And so I think the White Sox are like a 27th in homers allowed per nine innings by relief pitchers. So I think they would like one more dependable veteran guy that can use and leverage spots back there. And but like you said, they have a huge lead. So everything Chicago does this week is to set them up for October and not for the stretch run. And that's a great luxury to have.
We had an article yesterday where we proposed some trade ideas. And I believe you had Chris Bryant going cross town from the Cubs to the White Sox to play right field. I don't know. Cubs, White Sox, I can't remember the last time they made a deal. I don't know if that kind of barrier still exists with these front offices. Is that a realistic idea, or is that just kind of a fun fit that could work if these teams actually made a deal?
That is a fun fit idea thrown up by somebody who's in Chicago and would just absolutely love to see that. Now, you talk about them not trading with each other over the years, and that's largely been true, but let's not forget that it hasn't been that long ago that the White Sox sent Jose Quintana north and brought back Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez, and that might scare the Cubs away from making another deal. I don't know. No, I don't think that's a realistic thing. It's just a trade that I would love to see happen. I would love to see Chris Bryant stay in Chicago for one thing. Fun player to watch. Good guy. And the White Sox they have enough guys to fill the corner outfield spots, especially with Jimenez back. I think Jimenez is probably going to DH mostly, but he'll rotate some in left with Andrew Vaughn. And they've got guys like Brian Goodwin and Jake Lamb and Gavin Sheets and Adam Engel, who have done enough to fill the other spots. And then Robert's coming back. So maybe they don't need Bryant, but I would still love to see it.
Yeah, I would too. The AL feels wide open right now. I think Houston is the best team despite last night's crushing loss to the Mariners, but the White Sox certainly can win it. I'm with you. Add a bullpen guy, add a bat, whether it's second base or right field, and with that rotation, they can win it all. You know, the Cubs, speaking of them, they did make a trade last night. Andrew Chafin, the lefty reliever, goes to Oakland. The A's, Brad, they're 12-18 over their last 30 games. They've lost that wild card lead down to one game. We've been waiting for Billy Beane to make some moves. So his first one's a minor one here. Do the A's make more moves here in the remaining days before the deadline?
Yeah, it just seems like they really need to bolster a couple of key spots in that lineup. The production they've gotten in right field and designated hitter has been pretty abysmal. Scott Piscotty's been the most often played right fielder this year, and he's having a very poor year. Mitch Moreland has been the primary DH, at least against righties, also not having a great year. And those are two spots where when you need an injection of offense where you can be aggressive and really set yourself up for the stretch run. I mean, the addition of Andrew Chafin, I think, helps. You know, they have a really old bullpen, but it's effective. And the starting rotation is has been sort of underrated. I think they're like second in quality start percentage in the majors this year. So I like the pitching staff. I always like the defense in Oakland. They can get a couple of bats. I think that really sets them up to become the favorite for that second wild card slot that they're just barely holding on to right now. You know, a name that keeps coming up in my mind is Jorge Soler from Kansas City. And, you know, he's on an expiring contract. He's going to be a free agent. He's had a terrible season. It's looked totally lost at the plate for much of it. But all of a sudden, he's on a home run binge. And we've seen Soler in the past, when he gets hot, he stays hot. And he can carry a club for weeks at a time. And if he's on that kind of a streak right now, time might be right to drop him in the middle of a contending lineup.
Yeah, that's a good name. He has 6 home runs in his last 6 games. Nelson Cruz, I thought, was a guy that would have been a good fit for Oakland, but give Tampa Bay credit. They jumped on him early, beat Billy Beane perhaps to the punch with that trade. Yeah, so they could use a bat. Shortstop, I don't know. You don't hear Trevor Story rumors going to Oakland. Maybe they're content with Elvis Andrews, who, you know, really doesn't give you anything at the plate these days. The playoff odds, I don't know. You have your own system. FanGraphs right now have the A's at 42%, I think, to win the wild card. The Mariners at 6%. So on paper, they're a much better team, but that lead's hardly safe.
It's hardly safe, but again, I mean, what is the true talent level of these teams? The Mariners are one game behind, but they are, I'm doing this math in my head, 88 runs in differential behind. So what does that tell you about what's going to happen forward? It's not a guarantee by any stretch, but it definitely suggests that the A's are the superior team. And again, you know, we've seen them make splashes at the deadline. That's kind of the approach. They don't spend money in the offseason, but if they're in their position, they'll make a major move. The two prospects they sent to the Cubs for a short reliever, Andrew Chafin, that's actually a pretty good haul for the Cubs, and just in terms of upside that they got back. So the A's look like they're going to be aggressive, and they're definitely a team to watch in the next few days.
Yeah, and you know, and we don't want to say to write off the Mariners either. They remind me a little bit of that Orioles team. What year was it? 2012, maybe, where they went like 16-2, I think, in extra innings. They kept winning all those one-run games. I think that was the year Zach Britton didn't blow a save or something all year. No, that was a different year. But the Mariners have been getting unbelievable work out of their bullpen. And it's not what they've been. It's what they do moving forward, you know, and maybe that true talent level picks up. I have my doubts. The rotation, I think, is questionable. Chris Flexen's been great lately. Like I said, that bullpen's been way over its head. But it'll be fun if we get a wild card race between the A's, the Mariners, and maybe, Brad, the New York Yankees. Are they still in this?
I definitely think they're in this, you know, and you know, I never really let go of my preseason projections. You know, that's probably egocentric, but you know, at every point of the season, no matter whatever their nadir has been, and I assume the Yankees have hit their low point in the season, but maybe not. You know, maybe they'll have another string of blown saves or something. But I always expect them to play much better going forward than they have at any point this season. The offense has just been one of the most underachieving groups when you look at what they've done over the span of the last few years with largely the same players. It's really kind of incredible. And I still keep expecting the Yankees to go on a hot streak. And I don't know what they're going to do this week. If they did very little to nothing, I would still expect them to go on a run at some point and at least be a factor going into the last weeks of the season.
All right, let's end with this. Nationals, another tough loss last night. They are now, I believe, 5-16 in July. We're kind of seeing the coda to their season written here the last few days. Obviously, Max Scherzer, he has veto rights. He can block any trade. But the rumors, no doubt, they're heating up. The Nationals are going to look to trade him. So, two-part prediction here. Does he get traded? And if so, where does he end up?
Well, I'm going to, at this point, all of the tea leaves suggest that he is going to get traded. Where he's going to end up, of course, is extremely complicated. And part of it is because, you know, he's going to make, I believe, somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 million is the number that's left on his deal for what he's getting paid this year. And that money is actually deferred. So it's not like an immediate cash hit, but it is a hit against the luxury tax. And most of the leading contenders in the major leagues, that number is going to put them over the tax line. Does that mean they're not going to make that splash? I don't know. But it does make me look a little closer at teams that are contending and not over the tax line. The Brewers, the Giants, teams like that. And, you know, if I'm making a pick, I'm going to guess the Brewers. That's the team that I think that can get it done, has the will to do it, and has an owner that would be willing to spend that money.
Wow, I love that. I was looking at some numbers last night, and Brandon Woodruff, Corbin Burns, and Freddie Peralta are 1, 2, 3 in the majors in lowest OPS allowed. So, man, imagine adding Max Scherzer to that rotation. I'm going to say the Giants, for one reason, is they have an old rotation as well, you know, so they've been great all year. Kevin Gausman, Alex Wood, Johnny Cueto somehow has come back from the dead to be pretty good. They obviously want to avoid that wild card game. And they have a good farm system, better farm system than the Brewers. So I'm going to predict Max Scherzer to the Giants. But we'll see if where he wants to go. You know, maybe he's content to stay there. So we'll see what happens. We'll check back, Brad, and see how accurate our predictions are.
They're always spot on.
Always. All right, Brad, thanks for joining us today.
Anytime, Dave.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
All right, we're here with Sarah Langs, but we're going to skip the numbers game this week. We're going to talk about the big story of the day. We just talked about the Seattle Mariners a little bit with Brad Doolittle, but, you know, I can't get enough Mariners filling in for Buster today. So, Sarah, tell me that the Mariners are going to make the playoffs.
Well, I'm not sure I can go quite that far, but I will say I was just looking at the standings before we came on here, and I was not fully aware of the fact of just how many games better they were than the Blue Jays, who have kind of been my go-to team of, okay, if they make a couple moves here, they're going to be in the postseason. I mean, they are 3.5 games ahead of the Blue Jays right now, which I will say definitely surprised me. And, you know, I mean, this team has been really electric all year. And I know the run differential. I was just looking into some stuff. They have a minus 49 run differential. That's not necessarily what you want. It has been better of late. If you look since June 1st, it's only minus 1. So a lot of it has to do with some bad games early in the season. But they are a really fun team to watch. And this would be such a fun squad to finally, you know, break that playoff drought.
Yeah, I would say, you know, again, I'm a little biased here. They are fun. There's a lot of energy on that team. J.P. Crawford, I know he's not like a superstar player, but he's a really good player, gold glove caliber shortstop. He won it last year. but he's a super high energy guy. Dylan Moore, who hit the home run last night. Again, I get it. He's hitting under 200, but another really high energy guy. You know, some of the young guys they've called up. I like to see Jared Kelnick start hitting, but we'll see. I'm not going to write him off. In the Blue Jays, they just can't get on that roll. You know, another tough loss to the Red Sox last night. We all know what that offense is capable of doing. But the pitching, I don't know if it's just not good enough. Do they have any moves left, do you think, before the deadline here?
I mean, I want them to, because I really, you know, talk about energy. And again, completely agree with everything you said about the Mariners, especially J.P. Crawford, Dylan Moore, everybody else. But, you know, another team with energy that I think we would all love to see in the postseason is the Toronto Blue Jays. And I feel like that's why I've been hyping so much of, okay, if they make a trade for a pitcher. The thing is, it sort of feels like they need a starter and a reliever. And we're getting into the point of, you know, it's not just one move away. So I'm not entirely sure that it's actually going to happen, but that's what was on display last night. You know, I mean, losing that game where they were leading in the eighth inning, it just shows you that they need a couple more reliable bullpen arms. And we actually wrote a story for MLB.com today with a crazy trades that won't happen but should. And I took the Blue Jays and I had them trading with the Cleveland Indians, and I was going to give the Blue Jays Shane Bieber and Emmanuel Clase. And I want to be clear that this wouldn't actually happen, but this actually felt very up your alley, and it was just fun to think about. But then Shane Bieber was moved to the 60-day injured list, so I ended up sending Jose Ramirez and Emmanuel Clase and saying, you know what, if they can't find that pitching, maybe they can just score a million runs. So it almost feels like that's their best bet at this point. But, you know, maybe they're still a year away here. But that offense is one of the best in the American League. So I would really like to see them acquire a reliever and really, you know, maybe a starter as well, and get back a little bit more into that conversation.
Yeah, I think the key there is, if you did make a trade like that, yeah, is Cleveland going to trade Jose Ramirez? Probably not, but you never know, is those guys are controlled way beyond 2021. And I think you'll agree with this, you know, even though we expect and demand all this action at the trade deadline, teams that are looking up at the playoff teams don't tend to make the big moves. As much as we want them to add this guy, win a wild card, GMs, they're afraid to make a move that isn't adding to a team that's already kind of locked in for the playoffs. So I think Toronto's eye, I could be wrong here, is at this point more focused on 2022. Doesn't mean they won't add you can add an Ian Kennedy or somebody like that. And they do have a good farm system. So maybe they do go for one of those players that you can control beyond this season.
Definitely. And again, just to repeat, crazy moves that will not happen. Yeah. Love to see. I don't want anyone thinking that. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Indians are actually only a half a game behind the Blue.
Yeah.
So, you know, just adding to the unrealisticness there. But regardless of whether they make it this year, excuse me, or not, the Blue Jays are set up really well for the future. So, I mean, all of this is just adding to the Mariners' potential here. I mean, only a game back in the wild card as of right now.
Yeah, that's a good point about Cleveland. I've been overlooking them all year, but I don't know what the exact strength of schedule is, but they're in the weakest division. So a lot of games against Kansas City and Minnesota, who knows what they might do if they trade Jose Berríos and Byron Buxton. But Cleveland probably has an easy schedule. Seattle still has 11 more with Houston. Yeah, big win last night, but a lot of tough games. I wouldn't write off Cleveland from that wild card race. I hadn't thought about that. But speaking of crazy deals, so I asked Brad his opinion. The Nationals, they've gone in the dumpster here, 5-16 in July. Rumors, Max Scherzer, if he agrees to it, I think he's going to get traded. So your predictions, yes, does he get traded? And two, where does he end up?
it does really seem like he's going to get traded. And, you know, I do wonder, I've seen various reporters talking about whether this could end up being one of those Aroldis Chapman situations where we're pretty much expecting him to just re-sign there in the offseason. And I do think that he's so linked to the Nationals that that does seem like a possibility. And it does seem that he has a really good relationship with Mike Rizzo. So I could see that happening. And I want to mention that for all the Nationals fans who don't want to never see him pitch in Nationals uniform again. But, you know, I mean, this would be the rich getting richer, but how about Max Scherzer to the Giants? I mean, I think that would really cement them. We've all been talking about expecting them to be a wild card, despite the fact they've been leading this division pretty much wire to wire. And I think adding one more starter like that would really separate them from the Dodgers and Padres. So I know that's a little bit pie in the sky, but it's a team that's outside their division. We really don't expect Mike Rizzo to trade within the NL East. And I think it could make a lot of sense. I mean, the Giants have some pretty good prospects if they're willing to part with them. And you never know exactly how that's going to go, especially for a rental. But I don't know if that's too unrealistic, but it would be really cool to see him do that. Maybe bring some odd year magic to the Giants, something new for them.
Nice. I like it. No, that was my prediction. And I think for all the reasons you said, that the Dodgers and the Padres might both be in the market for starting pitcher. We don't know when Trevor Bauer is going to come back, if he even comes back. The Padres, Yu Darvish, he's their ace. He's been struggling a little bit. Chris Paddock, Blake Snell have been inconsistent all year. AJ Preller, he's made one move so far, but we know last year he made five or six moves at the deadline. I don't think he's done. So yeah, keep Max Scherzer away from your rivals. Makes a lot of sense. You know, now, okay, we talked about my Mariners. Your Mets split a doubleheader last night. What are they going to do? Because I know they're going to do something.
It really feels like they need a bat. I mean, you know, obviously the popular conversation, it feels like for a couple of years now, and especially, you know, coming to a head right now, is the Chris Bryant conversation. And Chris Bryant has not been great since June 1st. You know, I wrote about him the other day, and I would note that. I mean, he got off to an MVP caliber start, and it looked like, oh my goodness, the Cubs are going to get so much for him at the deadline. And he has not been great. I mean, as of the other day, it was 172 batting average since June 1st. And it is now 193, so slightly above, but not great. But I do think that they need to add a player like that. And third base is definitely a position that makes sense for them to add in. I know JD Davis has hit decently well since he came off the injured list, but it's a pretty small sample. And I think even entering the season, most people would say that JD Davis was probably not going to be a championship third baseman for the Mets. He would be fine. And he ended up getting hurt, and that obviously changed the trajectory. But it'll be really interesting to see if this new sort of Steve Cohen Mets team makes the splashy move at the deadline that, I mean, other than Yoenis Cespedes, they haven't necessarily made that big splash at the deadline in recent memory.
Yeah, it'll be interesting what we learn about Steve Cohen in the next 3 days, you know, because they do have a lead, so they have some room to play with. But, you know, if things had gotten better, they'd be running away with that division. I'm with you, JD Davis. He's a bad defensive third baseman. Do you think Trevor Story could be in the works? Either he fills in at shortstop until Lindor comes back. And then when Lindor does come back, Story then could slide over to third base. I know he's not having a great year either, but I think I would take him over Chris Bryant right now.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that he's a little bit more on the upwards trajectory in terms of how his season has looked. Obviously, the hit by pitch last night, we don't fully know the extent of that yet. I mean, he did stay in the game, but didn't look great. I was watching the Angels feed, and they kept focusing on his hand, and it was very red, as to be expected. So you do wonder how that could affect even these next few days. But I really like that idea. I mean, I think that the flexibility, and I'm sure he would be willing to have that flexibility for a team, especially if you're talking about getting to the postseason, which he's only barely sniffed with the Rockies. I think that could be a good move. I, you know, regardless, I think we're talking about an infielder who can maybe move around a little bit, because a lot of the guys who the Mets have are sort of, I mean, taking Lindor out of the conversation, of course, he's going to be out, I think, at least until mid-August. A lot of the guys that they have in the infield are a little bit flexible there. I mean, Jeff McNeil, that was part of everything about him when he came up, was all of these positions that he could play. So I do think the Mets are in a good spot there, that if they can acquire someone who is a bit flexible in the infield, they'll definitely have somewhere to play him. But I just think they need offense. I mean, they had a streak of not scoring that was finally broken when they scored that one run last night in the second game of the doubleheader. And they've had a handful of those. And even if some of that has been due to the fact that a lot of guys have been out due to injury, you know, in a normal season, and if the NL East had looked the way we expected it to, I don't think they would be in first place right now. So I think you need to be making a move sort of looking towards October, figuring, okay, we probably do win this division because the Braves are dealing with injuries, because the Phillies haven't been great and their bullpen has been bad. But you need to be thinking towards those postseason series, because when you're playing those teams, when you're playing the Giants or the Dodgers or whoever else it might be, it's not quite going to cut it.
One last one here, sticking to the NL East, of the two teams chasing the Mets, the Braves and the Phillies, which one of those do you expect to make the bigger splash here at the deadline?
You know, it's a great question, because I feel like I spent the first 2-3 months of the season saying, oh, it's going to be the Braves. But then Ronald Acuña Jr. got hurt, and they've dealt with so many pitching injuries that it doesn't really feel like they have that in them anymore. So I guess the answer has to be the Phillies. I mean, for all of the issues that they've had with their bullpen, they've had that kind of spark. I mean, that Andrew McCutchen walk-off home run last night, that was such an exciting moment. And I think you're looking for a team that's capable of something like that. And there's no question that their offense is capable of carrying them. I mean, Rhys Hoskins has been kind of, you know, hot and cold this season, but we know what he can do. Bryce Harper is a great player. Andrew McCutchen, when he is at his best, is also still a great player. So I think that on the strength of that and the fact that they might have the NL Cy Young, I mean, Jacob deGrom, if he comes back and continues to be otherworldly, he'll win it, even if he has like 150 innings. But if we're talking fewer innings than probably that number, I think it might be, it's either Zach Wheeler or Kevin Gausman, and Wheeler has a really good case. So I think it's probably the Phillies, but it'll end up coming down to, you know, those head-to-head games that they have, which I'm sure they still have plenty of left.
Yeah, no, I love you mentioning Zach Wheeler, the great season that nobody's talking about.
Yes.
I mean, even if DeGrom comes back and gets to 140 or 150, Wheeler might still end up with the higher WAR, you know, because he might get to 220 innings. He's going 7-8 innings every start. So, yeah, that's a great point. I think the Phillies will end with this. I think they just need their stars to play better. Aaron Nola, really, look at his ERA the last 2 months. Not great. Harper's been good, not great. Hoskins has been good, but not great. McCutchen's been up and down. You know, Alec Bohm's been a huge disappointment. Didi Gregorius is not having a good year. Maybe it's too deep into the season to expect more from all those veterans, but if those guys play like we might have expected, maybe the Phillies can catch the Mets.
Definitely. And that's kind of been the story of the Phillies, at least since they got Bryce Harper, if not even a little bit beforehand. I mean, on paper, I think they have looked like a postseason team these last few years, and they've ended up finishing right around 500 or even a little bit below. I think there is enough time for them to get going. I mean, we know how great Bryce Harper can be in a 2 month stretch, you know, or an entire season, but certainly I have no doubt that he can turn it around like that. And, you know, I think Nola and, you know, that you called out specifically might be the turning point there, because if the pitching, the starting pitching beyond Wheeler can be just a little bit better, I think that that takes a little pressure off the offense and maybe they can get there. I mean, again, for all of everything we talk about with the Mets and everything else, the Phillies are 3.5 games out. That is very doable. We've seen the Phillies specifically to the Mets overcome certainly larger deficits, but even, you know, it's July 27th and the 3.5 game lead is not very much at all. So it would be really exciting to see the Phillies do that, just because it really feels like they've been so close and yet so far over especially the last 3 or 4 years.
Yep. Second longest playoff drought, I believe, behind the Mariners. Real quick, favorite Olympic sport and least favorite Olympic sport.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so we're going Summer Olympics, I figure.
Summer Olympics.
All right. I love swimming. I was a varsity swimmer in high school for 2 years. And I was watching, when I was watching Katie Ledecky two nights ago, I was like screaming, and that sort of just caught me off guard at how into it I was. So I think I have to go swimming. And I don't know if I have a least favorite, but I still think I have a lot to learn about the new skateboarding, because we were watching that and it was just a little bit disoriented because I didn't know exactly what was good or bad beyond like really cool looking things. So I just think I need to do some more research there.
Yeah, skateboarding would be near the bottom of my list, but that might just make me old more than anything. I don't quite get it either, but I know the kids love it, and that's okay. So, all right, Sarah, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Davey, it is Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday, and I want to circle back to something all the way from the open, that Cubs walk-off, that we kind of undersold it with what went down there. So I didn't really know this, but Javier Baez and Reds closer Amir Garrett have some history. So Javier Baez is walking up to the plate. Him and Amir are talking trash. Javier Baez walks it off, first pitch, continues to talk trash, does like a boat row with his bat, pulls his jersey off. He walked to first base, but he just started wandering around the field after that as his teammates mobbed him. I think he did eventually around all the bases, but that was a pretty funny scene. I'm surprised it didn't lead to a brawl there, actually.
Yeah, that's a great point. And he actually hadn't started the game. He was pinch hitting. So he came in to face somebody he obviously wanted desperately to beat with the game winning hit. But do they play today? I'll have to check today's schedule, because maybe the ramifications will fall out today. We had a couple of those episodes at the end of that Houston-Seattle game after Dylan Moore's grand slam. Brooks Raley got ejected after throwing behind J.P. Crawford, Dusty Baker, and Scott Servais started yelling at each other. So we'll see if there's any fallout between Houston and Seattle today as well.
I love it. Love the spiciness.
Yes, nothing wrong with a little spicy action.
Oh, yeah. And you just mentioned Scott Servais. We've been talking Mariners this whole podcast. So Paris Hawks writes in at Hawks_Paris. Scott Servais certainly deserves some consideration in the 2021 AL Manager of the Year Award. 56-46 with not one player named Judge, Trout, Kershaw, Tatis, Ohtani, Betts, etc. Even if the postseason doesn't happen for the M's this year, Servais has certainly got these guys punching up.
Yeah, look, I did not plan, Taylor, that we'd have all this Mariners talk. No. It just fell into place. Yeah, no doubt Scott Servais has done a lot with that roster. You know, they really didn't have a legitimate all-star. Yusei Kikuchi was their lone representative. Yeah, they've been outscored by 49 runs. As we've talked about, they have that great record in one-run games. You know, last night, he's done a really amazing job with that bullpen. He did something interesting last night, bringing his closer, Kendall Graveman, into the game in the eighth inning when they were down a run. Who does that? But he wanted Graveman to keep the team in the game. It was the heart of the Houston order, Jose Altuve, Michael Brantley. So he wanted their best reliever facing their best hitters, pitched a scoreless inning, kept him in the game, and then Paul Sewald came on in the ninth and closed it out. But he's done that all season, using his relievers to match up and just not in assigned roles. And that's a manager who can be flexible like that. Deserves big points in my book. So yeah, he's had a great season.
Let's go to Chris Trenton at ctrend2316. Chris writes in, does it make sense for the Yankees to pursue Chris Bryant to put him at third base and shift the infield? Gio to shortstop, where he's better than Torres. Torres to second base and DJ to first place. First base with Voit being injury prone this year. Plus, Bryant can play the outfield. I'm sure the Yankees would love to have Chris Bryant. Do you think that's a likely landing spot for him?
No, I don't agree with the user here. I know Torres is not a Gold Glove shortstop, but Gio, his metrics at third base are okay, but they're not great. I don't think he's better than Torres. I don't think Torres is – he's not better at second than LeMahieu. And I don't think Bryant's better than Urshela. So I think you're actually making yourself worse at three defensive positions if you did that. Now, if you want to trade for Chris Bryant and play him in left field or something like that, you know, I could see that. But the Yankees, we also have to be aware, they're pushing up against that luxury tax. And all indications are they don't want to go over. So with Bryant's salary, I don't see it happening. If the Yankees do anything, I think it's just a couple more minor moves like the one they did yesterday to get a reliever. I don't think they're going to make a big trade.
I think it would be foolish for them to give up anything for these rental guys. That would be a little silly. All right, last one for today. Mike Hubbard at MHub513. Mike writes in, would like to hear your guys' current picks for Rookie of the Year. And for some reason, Mike tagged Chad Johnson on this question. I'm not really sure what that's about. I guess we can move on from it. Maybe he wanted Chad Johnson's Rookie of the Year picks. I don't know. But what do you think, Dave?
Chad Johnson, the old NFL player? Okay, well, exactly. Maybe he's a big baseball fan. So American League, Adolis Garcia made the All-Star team, but he's been in a big slump lately, kind of as we predicted, strikes out too much. I think I'm going to go with Luis Garcia from the Astros, who, you look at his numbers, absolutely dominant, although the Mariners did get to him last night. So I'd say Garcia, and Mariners righty Logan Gilbert's on the rise, but I'd say Garcia right now. National League, Trevor Rogers of the Marlins would probably be my guy, but he might be on an innings limit and he's on the IL right now. But he has a 2.14 ERA. So if he can come back, he has a shot. And then my number two guy, maybe Jonathan India of the Reds, who OPS around 800 on base percentage, leads all rookies. So I'd say Rogers, India, and Ian Anderson of the Braves, maybe my number three guy.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow and rate and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And that's it for today's show. Thanks to my producers. Thanks to Brad and Sarah for joining us. And one last shout out to the Mighty Mariners.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.